Welcome to The Deep End by On Deck, the podcast where visionary builders, creators, and thinkers discuss world-changing stories and ideas. I'm your host, Marshall Kozloff.
Telling a compelling story to a venture capitalist is something people don't spend enough time on their story. That first sentence is like really important. And how that frames your whole business is not the same thing that you use to sell to a customer. You're trying to prove and give confidence that you're the team that can build something for a long time and use money to create an asymmetric outcome. $100 million of revenue is like the minimum sort of threshold.
Joining me in the deep end today is Sasha Orloff. Sasha is the CEO of Puzzle, a modern accounting package for startups, which recently announced their $15 million Series A. Before Puzzle, Sasha co-founded LendUp and its spin-off Mission Lane, and was a board member for Revolut. He also participated in the eighth cohort of ODF. Continuing with our series on the meta problem of helping folks start more companies, we talk with Sasha about using accounting as a powerful decision-making tool and building infrastructure to start and scale companies. Sasha Orloff, welcome to The Deep End.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of episodes on the idea maze, kind of the process by which someone comes up with a company, sorts through all the different options you could have as a founder. So I'd love to start there. Walk us through the process by which you came to start, run Puzzle. And obviously, you can introduce yourself within that as well, too.
Sure. I'll try and combine them. I'll give the medium version because I think I'm old enough now that there's so many things that build up to what creates the story and the excitement that they're probably related. So at its core, I sort of think of myself as a math person. I spent most of my degrees in math. I spent most of my life building analytics and models. So I sort of think of myself sort of discreetly as a numbers person. From there, I've had a career working in nonprofit and multilaterals and startups and governments all around the world. But I think the part that really kind of formed this idea for Puzzle came from starting as an investor, as a venture capitalist, investing in fintech companies. And part of the job of a VC, theoretically, or at least it was for me, was looking at what were major trends that were happening in the market and what were the shifts that were big enough that would kind of create winners and create losers. What would those be? And then from there, ended up in my last company joining Y Combinator with my brother. Based upon a couple key inflection points in the business, that hit product market fit fast, scaled to hundreds of employees, millions of customers, raised hundreds of millions of dollars, spun out a new division off of the core technology that we built that, again, grew to hundreds of employees and millions of customers and hundreds of millions of dollars of capital raised. And at that point, I took a year off and I was thinking about ideas. And so I had the mindset of a non-technical founder, or at least non-technical from engineering side. I built models and analytics. What were major shifts in the market and what were big opportunities? And that kind of brought us to 2019 when we were first starting Puzzle.
I was going to ask what years these were, because what I think it's so fascinating about this space is that the answer of like what the trends, what those shifts would be would change probably every 6 months. So the version of you that's doing that in 2014 is way different than 2019. So, okay, like we're in 2019.
Yeah, 2010, there were the obvious shifts that were happening. Like the iPhone and Android came out. So we had smartphones now for everybody. And the question like a decade ago was, is everybody going to have a smartphone or is this just for like uber wealthy people along the way? And then the second big trend was we had the subprime mortgage crisis and huge reform of the financial services sector. And then third was like, this is so silly to say now, but like AWS was just coming out the cloud. Like you could now spin up a cloud infrastructure and do major machine learning processing and analytics processing in the cloud. These were the obvious trends that were happening, and there probably are across a bunch of different sectors. If we then think back to now 2019, what were the things that were kind of really happening in 2019 that were kind of major shifts in the market? We had a couple different exciting things. So interest rates had been zero for so long, which made venture capital a really attractive asset class, which meant startups were going to get funded. And there was a lot more money coming into venture capital than ever before. And the impact of that meant fund sizes were getting bigger, which meant venture capitalists had to take either a lot more bets or bigger and bigger, bigger bets than ever before. But you could now fund ideas that traditionally weren't possible in venture capital. So that was one kind of exciting thing for founders and that I was sort of thinking about. The second major trend that was happening was this wave of financial innovation that was happening sort of in the fintech world, at least. So we had these mega wins coming out with Stripe replacing Chase payment tech, and Gusto and Rippling replacing ADP and Paychex, and Ramp and Brex replacing American Express, and Mercury replacing the like legacy banks of the world. And all of these had built APIs. So they were modern companies that had APIs. And now you could think about the amount of data that was available for sort of origination, which was kind of exciting. And then one of the third major trends was about a decade ago, when you were a founder, you came up with a good idea and you raised venture capital, you would almost immediately get replaced as the founder with a quote unquote professional CEO and a quote unquote professional CFO. That was just the standard protocol. Here's your Series A term sheet. Here's your CFO. Here's your CEO. It's one of my buddies from business school, from like the venture capital firms, and founders were gone. And really the trend has changed pretty dramatically. So the profile of a founder and the profile of a CEO is very different today than it was 5 or 10 years ago, because there's now capital, really thanks to a lot of the trends of OnDeck and Village and Y Combinator and funds, mega funds like Andreessen Horowitz, who are sort of very pro-founder and building support network for founders. So that's a long-winded answer to like, all right, today I'm looking for a new idea. It's 2019. There is an idea to take a more ambitious bet than ever before. There's this wave of innovation and this ecosystem of financial innovation, but there's one piece missing, the core kind of accounting software that is still 30 or 38 years old and doesn't take advantage of any of these sort of modern stack and the capabilities. And then the profile's changed. And so—
And quick one pause of my there, because yeah. My objective in life is to never have anything to do with accounting at any level whatsoever. So when you say, you know, it has been updated in 38 years, like make that literal for folks who aren't dealing with that.
Well, that makes me sad because accounting is just so exciting and dynamic that like you should want to make it exciting. No, accounting today, I think, is thought of as a like check the box thing that doesn't add value to my life that I just have to do because I have to pay taxes. Every company has to file taxes every year. Even if you're not generating any revenue, you have to file taxes. Two, when you think of a founder, if you're going to raise venture capital, you have to know your numbers and you have to understand how to explain what those numbers mean. And if you're just running a business, you kind of want to see the cash flows. And accounting is this like static summary, delayed report used for the IRS that doesn't tell you how to make your business better. But what if we could change accounting into this thing that becomes the competitive advantage for you as a leader? What if you could intuitively understand your business and you could make data-driven decisions because you understood how your business operated? And that was, the opportunity. It's this ability to take anybody, regardless of background, and make accounting and finance their superpower without needing a degree in accounting and finance, and give people the ability to have confidence when they're going to raise money and spend almost no time being able to do it. Just some of the edge case handling and the error case handling. Less work, way more value, and making this an important skill set. It's a new language that the more you know, the more powerful you'll be, especially as a leader and a CEO.
Yeah, so a million different questions. And I'll give you 10 points for giving a remarkably coherent history of the past like 10, 15 years. Very straightforward. So let's actually hit a couple of things there. So number one.
The benefits of being old.
Yeah, right. Old in the category of startups and tech, obviously, yeah. As someone who just, you know, turned 31. Couple questions. So number one, why, if you're sitting in the year 2019 and you see all these different trends, you're talking about how your navigation of the idea maze is about focusing on, you know, fintech and all these different things that matter. How do you determine that that means you want to be a founder versus you wanted to be a VC or you wanted to join a company? Like, how did you sort through the like role types you were going to assume, especially as someone who suggested you're non-technical at the engineering level?
It's fun to reflect on a question like this. I think part of it is I'm just a founder at heart. I love the ecosystem. I love the venture community. I love creation. Maybe it's growing up in the Bay Area. Maybe it's just seeing the possibilities. Maybe it's having been a venture capitalist and seeing what you could enable. I love the startup ecosystem. I love creating better products in the market. It's just fun. So that's the thing that gives me energy personally. It's kind of the framework of Ikigai. You want to have something that you're passionate about, you're good at, and makes you money. So I thought this was a big opportunity. It's something that I was excited that I felt I could solve and I wanted myself. And I interviewed 100 other founders, investors, CFOs, and they got excited about the vision. That got me excited. Part of it is also, I feel like it has to be more than just a business opportunity. And when I thought about what are some of the main pillars of the economy, there's investing in the public markets, but I didn't really have an angle there. And I think it's kind of rigged and Robinhood was crushing it at the time. There's investing in home ownership. And I wanted to do something that wasn't regulated because my last two companies were like consumer credit regulated entities. And then there's like equity in private companies. It's entrepreneurship. And in the startup world, what I love is like a lot of employees get equity. And so what if we could make companies more successful? What if we could empower leaders to be more successful? Well, that benefits not just the founders, it benefits the employees who own equity, it benefits the customers of that startup, it benefits the shareholders. And so that's kind of our thing. It's not just accounting, it's making it a system of financial intelligence. And the thing that I get excited about is like we work hard to make sure founders feel empowered and they're there to build better businesses. And so that's the part that then got me the motivated and like kind of my heart.
You know, I think the next question, you were referencing the, you know, zero low interest rates in, you know, 2019. And there's obviously this phrase, which is really taken off by, you know, zero interest rate phenomenon. You were describing how a result of the low interest rates and just the dynamics of money flowing into the venture capital space were that founders just had a lot more control than they did relative to what says us telling a story about like the dot-com boom and bubble of the 1990s. To what degree do you think that story you told about being a founder in 2019 has changed because we're no longer at a low interest rate phenomenon? And then also related to that, are there any other behaviors you think or stories you could tell that are just different between 2023 and 2019? Because I think this is just like fascinating to see this play out.
I had conviction that this was going to be a big idea. One of the headwinds we had, so the pro and the benefit of starting this in 2019 was capital was flowing a little bit easier and it was a zero interest rate environment. And therefore people were willing to take big bets. The downside of that was if you were an early stage founder in the past couple of years, there really wasn't much due diligence in venture capital. Like you could, in the early days, it was easier than ever. It was still hard, don't get me wrong, but it was easier than ever to raise money for a startup idea. And nobody was really doing due diligence. Look at these sort of collapses and these fraud cases of venture capital just pummeling money on companies without having a balance sheet, without having a financial statement, without understanding their metrics. Then the pandemic happened and capital got even more free-flowing than ever before. That was like crazy. It was like four times as much venture capital, I think, three or four times as much venture capital than ever before. That means there's just even more to build and grow and scale companies. One of the downsides right now is we're kind of reverting back to the mean. And if you've just started building your company in the past 3 years, that's your perspective. You're like, this is way harder than ever before. If you've been doing this since the late 90s in and out of the market like me, you've seen these ebbs and flows three times now. The benefit today for our business, for Puzzle, is you got to know your numbers now more than ever before. It's not just a differentiator in becoming a strong founder to understand their business. Compliance and financial diligence is coming back stronger than ever. And if you can't do it, you're going to be subject to more predatory investors. The last couple of years, we've seen really founder favorable terms. And today, it's less founder favorable, still more favorable than 5-10 years ago. But if you don't understand how your business is growing, you don't understand the numbers of your business, and you're waiting to the last minute to raise money from not a position of strength or power, and you don't understand how a VC is going to look at your business, they're not motivated to fund you right away. They're motivated to get you into the worst place and take more percent of the company for less money. That's just happening today. And so I view it as a core capability of every founder. It is more pronounced now than ever before. And we're the best system in the market because we're the only ones that are designed specifically for founders.
Yeah. So talk us through on that note, like when on the founder journey should someone start using Puzzle?
It's going to sound self-serving, but I think that you should do it day one.
Always.
It's just part yesterday. It's part of the responsibility of everybody that is founding a company. The question just becomes, when do you prioritize doing it? And most of the reason you waited longer is because you couldn't just go really to QuickBooks and Xero and get started. You needed to have a bookkeeper and accountant. And they're expensive. They're people and they need to make a living and they need to make money. And that's expensive. Some of the technology-enabled things have actually doubled or tripled the price of bookkeeping for all startup community now. And so we looked at that and said, well, how do we make this easy? Because the longer you wait, the longer you're out of compliance, the more complicated it is. And so we said, okay, well, let's make it free for every brand new company. Then we said, let's build a bunch of automation into the system so that it's almost a no lift. You just connect and like set it and forget it at the worst case. It's free. It does its job. Our system learns and gets better every day. We get about, in the early stages, about 85 to 90% of all the work done automatically for you. We then said, all right, let's put a network of on-demand bookkeepers on the platform. So whenever you're ready, you can just, you don't have to vet one. We'll match you to the right one. And then let's take a bunch of 150 scaled venture companies' infrastructure. They shared it with us and we built it into the system. So you don't need to have any knowledge about accounting and finance to get started. It's totally free. There's no lock-ins. You can download your general ledger. You can download your data. You can delete and wipe at any time. And you're just set up compliantly from day one. Why bother doing that? Because this is the consequence. If you don't, you will have challenges raising money. That's a bummer. Why give yourself a leg down on something that's so hard anyway? Two, you got to file taxes every year, no matter what. It doesn't really matter. And so if you file it, let's just say by April 18th or whatever, you file it, or you file an extension and then it's 6 months later, it's in there. You're going to remember all of your receipts and documentation from like 15, 18 months ago. You have to remember what it was, what it's for, what's the receipt. Just let our system just start collecting this stuff for you and tagging it. Or do it little by little. And then we built this fully guided experience for founders that want to start doing it themselves and are curious to be able to do it themselves. So it's a fully guided experience. You don't need any expertise. Set it and forget it. Otherwise, you're going to be out of compliance. You're going to pay fines and penalties. You're not going to take advantage of R&D tax credits, which are up to $250,000 for every tech startup that you can do. Like it's gonna turn something that could cost nothing and a little bit of time into tens of thousands of dollars. If you're a brand new startup, that's $10,000, $5,000, that's a lot of money. Hundreds of dollars every month, that's a lot of money. But you're gonna do it and it's gonna just be twice as much later. That said, if you can find another bookkeeper or taxpayer anyway, 300,000 bookkeepers and taxpayers quit over the past 2 years. You also have to find one that's willing to work on your stuff. And if you're not taking it seriously and they have a choice between somebody that cares about this and takes it seriously or somebody that's like, I haven't done anything, I don't really care, it's not that important, I just want to do it. Like, who are they going to choose? They're going to choose the person that values their service.
Are you limiting this to startups? Is there a world where like LLCs are using this? Like how should we think about like the total like market size for folks who are interested in something like this? Because it's not just, obviously, like you're correct about, you know, startups and the scale, but I think everyone hates the process you're really describing. So I think what you're saying would speak to a lot of people. So I'm curious like how big you think this gets or where the focuses should lie.
The ambition at Puzzle is that it's not just founders. It's just not startup people. It's not accountants. It's not CFOs. Having an understanding of the cash flows of the business and the value of the business should be something that every decision maker should have access to. But it's really not thought of, again, as a system of intelligence or a data platform. It's thought of as this boring check the box static report that comes out like weeks later. It's not relevant to you. So I think there's actually relevance in a permissioned way to let people say, all right, you have a budget to hire this many people. Here's a certain amount of money. And you can see just this, your budget and your tracking, or to be able to understand the drivers of the business. The more business leaders that are influential in a company, whether that's the founding team, whether they have hired an executive team, the more that they're empowered to understand how the business works, the better your business is going to be. So I think this is like a multiplayer collaborative vision that is relevant to any single person starting a company, whether it is the local bakery, whether it is the venture-backed startup, whether it is the solo entrepreneur. But where is the pain the most acute right now? The pain is the most acute from the startup community because they have shareholders, which not every local bakery does. You might be a sole entrepreneur. If you have shareholders, you got to do financial reporting. You need to have a greater understanding of how to value your company because now you have shareholders and you're trying to build something big. And you're more likely to use a modern stack, which we can automate a lot of the work for. So I think of like the biggest acute pain right now is startup founders. They also are more likely future accrual. You need to do accrual. There's two ways to do accounting, three ways really, but at the core, there's cash when money moves and accrual, sort of creating a moving the time frames and the dollar amounts to when the work was actually accomplished. And small businesses have an exemption from the IRS. They can do cash accounting. Venture-backed founders or people that have ambition to drive quite a bit of millions of revenue need to do accruals. As soon as you do accruals, you lose sight of cash. You don't see cash, you don't see burn, you don't see runway, you don't see budgets because you're basically manipulating the time frame of cash. So they're the ones that have the most in pain. And with our system, you don't have to choose. You get cash and accruals. You have this future scalable system. You have cash, you have visibility of all these non-GAAP metrics. And so I think that's where the pain is the most acute. That's where we really want to solve, because that is what hurts, I think, a lot of people the most. But from a relevancy, I think over time, Puzzle is just going to be the default solution, just like when you start transaction processing, like you're just, you use Stripe. If you're going to do payrolls, you're just going to use Gusto Rippling. If you're going to use, you're just going to use Brex or Ramp. You're not going to go use these old school ones. Some people will, but like, it's just going to be the default for every new ambitious person starting a company.
You know, a question that comes to mind, especially in how you were articulating the company, you know, using the frame like multiplayer, I'm curious how you as a founder think of tagging trends to your company. So there's a version, I think the Web3 part would be a little more difficult, but like the multiplayer, like that you could gamify this somehow. You could definitely have some sort of like AI framing, especially now given that interest level. So how do you think of, here's the core idea, here are trends that may drive customers, drive VC interest, but maybe they may like stretch you a little beyond what you're actually kind of working on. Like, how do you think through that part of the idea maze?
That's the part that I'm excited about. Just thinking about what are the trends and what are the things that can happen. We don't really kind of like talk about this publicly. No, we don't hide it. It's just, it's not usually really interesting to the conversation. But to answer your question, we sort of internally think about why our business is better positioned in the future to take advantage of AI and more automation and more collaboration and multiplayer. Because internally, we think of ourselves as a data platform, a financial data platform that has all of these value that is built on top of it. The value that we're starting with is accounting, because accounting is required by every single company and it's not thought of as anything valuable. And so we think about like the multiple outputs. You have your cash accounting. That's what founders like to see, because they like to see cash. You have your accrual accounting. That's what bookkeepers and investors like to see, because it's argued that that's a more accurate way to understand the health of your business. There's these non-GAAP financial metrics like cash, burn, runway, ARR, MRR, burn multiple, et cetera. Those are another output that comes out. We have an API for anything else that a company can think of. We have automatic seamless connections to LTSE's startup runway.io. We have an embedded app in the Stripe marketplace. You can see your accounting right native in your Stripe dashboard without needing to leave. We're the only software built native to the Stripe API. Runway.com, one click and you get this like really powerful runway tool. More and more kind of things could get built on this. So I sort of generally think about, as AI comes about, our vision is to give everybody confidence for their most important decisions. And how does AI help? Well, it can do a couple of really interesting things. With some of the powers of language learning models, you don't have to know how to ask the question in order to interpret what that answer could be. You might not need to know how to look on your financial statements to get an answer or a chart or a graph or see differences between periods or variance or even understand what to pay attention to. And that is possible uniquely with us because we house this data platform that you get automatically as part of your Puzzle account that can power all of these things. So I think we're best positioned as this and new trends come about that have to do with efficiency, automation, and intelligence.
I think another question would just be, what are the outer limits of how automated and straightforward these processes that you need to just take and participate in as a founder could be? So to your point, bringing this like bookkeeping function down to as simple as possible. There are so many parts of the job of a founder that I think many people just don't enjoy. You want to kind of focus on the core thing. How automated and how simple can just the broad stack ever get? Do you think there's a hard limit to it?
Yeah. I think the exciting question behind the scenes is like, can AI replace accounting and bookkeeping? And our view is no. But it can do two things, at least at this stage, that are really exciting. Between automation and machine learning.
Wait, quick question. AI, so when you say no, do you mean no in the present tense or just like in the longer term too? Like if there's maybe some legal requirement.
Part of accounting is subjective. It's not just discrete numbers based. And so it takes judgment of how to set up your business, how to create policies, how to organize your business in a way. The boring parts of accounting, we have solved, are solving, and will solve better because of this. I think one of the things that most people don't believe, like one of our challenges, frankly, is we need help with both, is how do you market it? There is nowhere else in the market that you can go in 4 minutes from right now, this moment you're listening to right now, and everybody listening, 4 minutes, you could go to puzzle.io and you can have fully generated all of your historical financial statements, metrics, reconciliations, all drafted right in front of you that you can click and explore and trace down to the transaction. Most people don't believe that's possible because they think, well, if it was possible, then it would be done. We spent years building this. So from an automation perspective, in literally minutes, you have superpowers for your startup as a founder, as a CEO, as an investor. It's there. It's done. It's there today. It's just going to get better and better and better. So I think one is a lot can be automated. I think with LLMs, language learning models, becoming more popular, the interpretation to retrieving and getting more data out of the system will become easier to the non-power user and accountant. And the choice of your stack really matters. For example, if you use Mercury, it's the only bank that has an API, I think, that we found today. You can fully automate your cash reconciliations. We do it. We post it for you. We show you everything. You can see it. The concept of accounting is complete and accurate, and we have confidence that it is always accurate. If not, we can tell you the exact dollar amount to why. That's really powerful. It's behind the scenes. That just takes work. You can not use Mercury, for example. I'm not picking on anybody else. There's other people that also could do this and will do this over time. But like you're just going to pay a couple hundred dollars over time, either 50 to 100 bucks every single month to a bookkeeper to manually do this. Yes, it's kind of buried in the cost of bookkeeping. Because you have to just like think about the total cost. There's the cost of your software and there's the total cost of time and effort. Just the cost of money. You're paying somebody in these fees to do this for you. You don't have to. If you use Ramp, you get all of the receipts and all the transactions down in our system. You can validate and verify everything. And same with Stripe. There's a lot more coming soon that we're excited to talk about, but you're paying for it. It's just a matter of whether you want to pay software to do it or whether you want to pay a human to do it.
You know, related to the marketing question of folks not thinking this can be done, why did it take until, let's say, 2019 for this to come about? Like, did that require, once again, to your point, the cloud, Stripe existing? Why wasn't this something that was just put together in 2005?
One of my favorite essays from Paul Graham is called Schlup Blindness. It's kind of this general concept of it's a problem that we're just so used to, accustomed to having to deal with, that it's just an accepted problem. We all know about, but it just exists anyway. To me, this is a great example. I thought it was just a problem for me. And I interviewed 10 founders and then 25 and 50. And then I interviewed now hundreds of founders, hundreds of accountants, hundreds of CFOs. And they were all like, yeah, this is a big problem. It needs to be solved. All right, so why isn't it solved? From our analysis, it just takes 5 years and $50 million to build. That's hard. It's hard to be an entrepreneur to think about right now, today, it's 2023. It's hard to think like right now, am I going to still be excited to launch this product and its true vision in 2028? That's a long time of people's life. It also is a very technically precise thing. Accounting is binary. It is either 100% accurate or it doesn't matter. It's like going to Mars. If you pay somebody to go to Mars and you get 95% of the way there, you're not like excited. That's the loss, right? You're either on Mars or you're not on Mars. So this is a similar type of challenge, which requires a lot of expertise, a lot of software, and a lot of time. And that just doesn't fit nicely into a digital venture, like raise a couple $100,000, then raise $1 million, then raise $3 million, then raise $10 million. It didn't exist. There weren't a modern stack for everything else in your financial stack. There wasn't a Stripe, Gusto, Rippling, Brex, Mercury, Ramp. Like, these things just didn't exist. Now they do. So I think there's a company probably every year, at least, between Techstars and Y Combinator and OnDeck, and they all see this same vision. It's not a new thing. It's just, it's hard to have that much conviction that you're willing to spend that much time doing it. And so they start and they realize, one, it's hard. It's just complex. It's a lot of software and it has to be 100% accurate in every edge case, every single month, all the time. No questions asked, no excuses. It doesn't matter. And then what ends up happening is they then build like a dashboard company or an analytics company, or they build a bookkeeping business, all really great businesses. And then it's hard if you get started to think about investing 5 years and $50 million in a team into something. You have to have a lot of conviction to allocate that much capital to something and that much time of your life.
Next question in this section basically relates to the broader theme of our recent series, which is all about the obstacles that are in the way of prospective or current founders that they're trying to start companies to solve big problems. So I'll take this question in this last section in two different parts. So part one, and we'll split them into two. Part one is just as you are looking around OnDeck, Y Combinator alumni world, like your presence in this space over the past few decades, what are the biggest gaps you see, or the bottlenecks really, that prevent founders from founding companies?
I've been blessed to be an investor, and I'm an LP in a few funds. And I then was an alumni advisor at Y Combinator and on it. I try and spend at least 2 30-minute chunks helping founders raise capital, not like introductions, although sometimes I do, is more like helping refine the story. I think there's three things that I see over time that are interesting or a point where that I take into account. One is a lot of founders don't take fundraising seriously. This is in the venture community. Like, there's a lot of ways to build a business and a lot of different types of business. They don't take it seriously. They just kind of ad hoc, or they take it like a little seriously and they do a little bit of preparation, but they only see their life going outwards. They don't see the venture capitalist life and what they're prospecting. VCs are getting pitched exciting ideas every day, all the time, by incredibly smart, incredibly passionate people. I think telling a compelling story to a venture capitalist is something people don't spend enough time on their story. That first sentence is like really important. And how that frames your whole business is not the same thing that you use to sell to a customer. You're trying to prove and give confidence that you're the team that can build something for a long time and use money to create an asymmetric outcome. $100 million of revenue is like the minimum sort of threshold. So I think one is not enough time to telling the story. Two is not taking the process seriously and sort of dragging it out. And that doesn't work to anybody's advantage. FOMO is kind of one of the things that everybody has to do. And those are both related to the process. Two is a lot of people don't have a good answer for like, what's your moat? I know it's sort of a little overstated, but like, why are you going to be able to build something so defensible that you're going to have a victory faster than your incumbents or competition can beat you? What are you and your position and technology there? And then the third case is a lot of people don't plan for success. Planning for failure is easy. Like, you run out of money and then you're done. Are you setting a goal and heading the milestones and understanding what are the requirements to actually build a big asymmetric outcome? And so I think from the outcome is a lot of people raise venture capital that probably shouldn't. A lot of people try and raise venture capital too early. And a lot of people aren't intentional and they don't realize they're competing with the CEOs of all these other like great companies. The competition is fierce and you have to be better and you have to stand out. And people are like, oh, my business looks like pretty good. Maybe, but like in that moment, is it better than everything else the venture capitalist is seeing? They're only going to make a couple bets a month or a year. They have to be so excited that they're willing to fight against their partners and they're willing to battle for you against the hundreds of other pitches they saw that week.
Here's a question. What is Puzzle's moat, since you set yourself up for that one?
I have to share now my strategy like publicly. We just launched like last week. You got to give me a little bit. I think at a meta level, our moat is we've raised a lot of capital. And that gives us the flexibility to
understand. You can't just flip a switch is the point too. Like, this is hard.
It takes 5 years to build our vision. We're 3.5 years in. It's functional. It's working. We worked with hundreds of startups. We've processed $11 billion as of today or now. And then by having a data platform and the general ledger structuring together, we're just an advantage for automation, collaboration, and machine learning and AI better than any other system today. You're not going to beat us. Like, this is the way that we've sort of structured and architected. Our team, I think, is insane. We have such an incredible engineering team. We have 5 accountants that also are engineers that have built modern tech companies that you've heard of. Our VP of engineering, right, is from GitHub, and she ran infrastructure and storage and data there. Our CTO built one of the largest global multi-currency ledgers that has ever existed, IPO'd, got acquired by PayPal, and is one of the largest transaction processing multi-currency systems. Our head of partnerships ran global partnerships for Twitter and Spotify. We have an insane engineering team that cares about design and cares about the user experience, have built huge other fintech companies and infrastructure, lots of dual degrees of math and computer science. We just have a great team. I think that really helps. We have clarity of vision. And then the biggest moat I think we have right now is we understand the mindset of a founder, because we have a lot of founders on staff. I've been a founder a long time. I've been an investor. I've seen it from the VC hat. I've seen it from the founder hat. I've seen it from the board hat. I've seen it from the LP hat. This is just important for every single person. We understand better. That's why it's easy to get on board. It's free. We give you this intuitive experience so that anybody, regardless of background, can understand their business for the first time. There isn't a system like that. So I think our moat is our customer, our partners, our team, and then it's been 30 years since anybody has taken a meaningful stab at this space. And the data infrastructure and the ability to build and think about the business as a data business that drives efficiency and intelligence in a system, it's just a different mindset from somebody who views their responsibility that accounting is this static summary report that comes 3 weeks later. You get it in real time. You get your financial statements every single day, all the time. It's just automatically streaming in real time. It's just better. It's like a Tesla versus a Corolla with ludicrous mode and autopilot. It's built, the capabilities of Tesla are so much better than a car that was designed in the 80s.
I think the last big question to wrap the podcast is, A, like I said, we are interested in bottlenecks that prevent founders from solving big problems. So completely unrelated to accounting, puzzle, anything like that. You mentioned getting to Mars. Like, what are some big problems that you think that you would maybe be interested in solving? Like, let's say puzzle just like works out to your wildest extent. So you've got a lot of capital to deploy, or just something in general that you're recreationally interested in. Like, what are some big problems that you're interested in someone working in tech, someone who's a founder solving?
Well, I've been so busy working on puzzle for the last years, like every day, all day, that like taking a step back and thinking about what are the major challenges that we're facing and what are the major inflection points. I think that there's a lot of momentum right now about AI, and that is just going to creep into every type of business. So if we think about how did software start eating businesses, and then how did mobile start eating software, and how is AI going to start eating everything else? That's the next big inflection point. I think blockchain had a lot of hype, but there just wasn't any general applicability. Like if you lived in Argentina and you couldn't buy dollars and your currency was getting devalued, like totally get it. But on a global scale, what's the value of that? It's interesting technology, but like, I don't know, on a day-to-day basis, I could have it, I could not have it. AI is different. It's like making my life better immediately all the time, writing code, writing content, finding information, like joining these things. I think that's exciting. It's hard not to get really excited about climate. Like how do we reduce carbon in our world and capture? I think that is really exciting. I am not a vegan, but my family members are and friends that are, because when I live in San Francisco, so they're everywhere. But like, I think that there's the reducing the amount of impact we have on animals to be able to still eat delicious food. There's a restaurant, Baya or Baya in Hayes Valley, that's full vegan. The food there is legitimately like delicious, top notch against any other major restaurant. And you wouldn't tell the difference. The more that that happens, I think the more we can reduce some of the pain and suffering of the animal producing world as well, which again affects the carbon world. And then education. I think one of the really exciting outputs of COVID is you can live anywhere and learn almost anything with the internet. How do we make that sort of seamless so there's more opportunity for people that don't want to live in San Francisco, where there's like homeless people and drugs and violence and it's expensive and like, why should everybody have to live here in order to have the opportunities here? There's just more to be done in helping produce opportunity globally and seamlessly.
I think that's very well stated and the perfect place to end it. I think folks have a great challenge, especially since you laid it down, the 4 minutes from podcast to puzzle.io. Where should folks go if they want to actually see if the rumors or the opportunities available for them?
It's free to get started. Puzzle.io, literally in 4 minutes. I know you don't believe me, but like at some point, no,
I hope we would not have booked you if turns out it's not real.
No, it's legit. Hundreds of companies have done billions of dollars. Like it's great. Go to puzzle.io, do it. On every single page, what we're doing is we want to make this the default solution for every founder that's starting an idea going forward. So the reason we're making it free is what we want is we want feedback. What's working, what's not working, what else we could build. On every single page, there's a button and there's an intercom that asks for suggestions and feedback. If something isn't working, please tell us. Unfiltered feedback, all the ideas. That's what we ask for. And we want to make it such that like this is just the no-brainer advantage that every founder has. And then you can just reach me at sasha@puzzle.io. I'm on Twitter. That's my email address. I answer some of the intercoms. It comes and blasts the team. I see all the feedback that comes in. I'm easy to get a hold of, especially for people that help us make Puzzle better. and care about accounting and compliance and finance and want to build something big. Like, I'm here and I will make time for you.
Awesome. Sasha, thank you so much for joining us in the Deep End.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us in the Deep End. If you enjoyed your stay, give us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with your friends and colleagues to help grow the show with us. We've also got show notes and more episodes available at ideas.beyonddeck.com. See you next time.